And good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining the Interoperability Standards Work Group. I'm Mike Berry with ONC, and we are always excited that you could be with us today. As a reminder, your feedback is welcomed, which can be typed in the chat feature throughout the meeting, or could be made verbally during the public comment period that is scheduled at about 11:55 Eastern Time this morning. I'm going to begin roll call of our work group members, so when I call your name, please indicate that you are here. And I'll start with our co-chairs, Stephen Lane.
Good morning.
Aaron Malik.
Good morning.
Kelly Aldridge. Oh, hi, Aaron. Kelly Aldridge. Liddell Briggs Melanson. Hans Wootendeck.
Good morning.
Thomas Cantalina. Nina Caraballo.
Good morning.
Good morning. Grace Cordovano.
Good morning.
Steve Eichner.
Good morning.
Sanjeev Tandon.
Good morning.
Raj Goodparty.
Good morning.
Jim Durgis.
Good morning.
Ken Kamoto. Leslie Leonard. Hung Lu.
Good morning.
David McCauley.
Hello.
John McDonald. Mark Savage.
Morning.
Michelle Schreiber. Abby Sears. And Ram Sharam.
Good morning.
Good morning, everyone. Now please join me in welcoming Stephen and Aaron for their opening remarks.
Well, thank you as always for all of you on whatever time zone you're in for joining us today. Really appreciate it. We are in the home stretch of our task one work. And looking forward to making as much progress today as we possibly can. So we are going to jump right in. We are going to focus in on recommendations that have been coming through, many of which we've already discussed, but we're also hoping to give Hans and Clem a bit of time. They put a lot of thought into a number of recommendations that have not gotten a lot of airtime, and we want to give them a chance to focus on items of high priority to them. We're hoping to finalize some recommendations around health status and the laboratory. Hung Lu has put a lot of effort into his recommendations that we've talked about briefly. And then we will just continue to get as far as we can. Given the time available, we want to be as efficient as possible and drive towards recommendations that we can feel comfortable with and not go down too many rabbit holes because we just don't have time for that. Aaron, do you want to add to that intro?
I just want to note that we've taken a lot of the workgroup deliberations and memorialized them as a set of recommendations. So if you haven't looked at the spreadsheet, be good to look at that, review the recommendations, make sure that you're in alignment with how we've formalized some of this, because that's going to form the basis for the formal recommendations letter.
And I want to give particular thanks to Arian and Mark, and as well as others, but I know there was a lot of time spent over the weekend trying to formalize those recommendations, and we're going to hope to review as many of those as possible here today. All right, good. So let's go on then to the next slide. Just a reminder of our charges. We're focused here on charge one. We're not going to belabor the point. Let's go on to the next slide. And so I think, Clem, are you here? Hans, are you prepared to guide us through some of your high priority recommendations and see if we can work through those? Why don't you just, we'll let Al pull up the spreadsheet and we can edit in the background and just point us to the rows you want to discuss.
Okie doke. Let's see. I'll have the spreadsheet up as well. Sorry, I was thinking I was going to be after Clem and I could organize my desktop a little bit better. First of all, is that overall comments that that I have are need to be taken in the context of US CDI is from our perspective as we're moving through, and I'm wearing a little bit more of a EHRA hat, is that we really need to cover much more than what is currently stated to set out, a core set. We believe that we actually need to go to the E-High, if not beyond level. So for those who have not heard that statement before, want to make sure that you're aware of that. That's the context. So from our perspective, no data element being proposed in itself is inappropriate. It's good. The main challenge is timing on do we have the standards in play that if we get to certification that we need to move forward, that we can move forward with that in ASVAB or otherwise. So that's for us a key element of is it ready or not. Not whether it's a good or not. They all need to be addressed. In that context, a couple of things that I want to run by. I'll go in roughly the order. First one is around discharge summary. So it's actually a couple of rows higher there. It is the challenge there is the clarity is that the suggestion indicates specific data to include, yet the discharge summary as it's currently been defined as part of clinical notes is narrative. So the challenge is, are we going to start to shift into now creating effectively a discharge summary document, not a note per se, that is fully structured, that is already part of a CCDA document type. So this becomes a bit of a challenge that are we trying to replicate that given it's a narrative note in play. Other parts is that as we get deeper, that gets too far for today, is that some data or discharge summaries, if you're an HIT system, EHR, that's specialized on ambulatory, they would not have the notion of a discharge summary. So here, the suggestion is that that really does not fit that well because we are not trying to create discrete data within narrative. But that might be a clarification question that we have, but it's critical for us.
Arian?
Yeah, thank you. And I think sometimes in USCDI, we cross over into interoperability use cases and interoperability specifications. Hans, the way I'd think about what you're saying is that the discharge summary is a note, and there is also a discharge summary that might be an implementation guide, either attached to consolidated CDA or to a fire implementation spec that specifies the format of a structured discharge summary that would include the narrative as well as accompanying data. Would that be a useful way to frame the point that you're making, Hans?
And perhaps that might be then in USCDI to indicate there is a discharge summary note construct and there's a discharge summary quote unquote structured document, whatever the right term is there, so that we distinguish that we're not trying to say we are trying to accomplish everything with one. If because there's value to the note and there's value to a set of structured data.
That seems pretty clear to me. So we should specify that the discharge summary in this USCDI context is the narrative note.
Any objection to that?
And the note to that David is making, please don't lose the narrative. Absolutely.
Really fast, I think that also applies to the disability descriptions as well, that there's a distinction between structured and unstructured data, and we're interested in both.
But specifically to this particular data element that is in USCDI, our comment is simply to be as clear as possible on the part of ONC that this is in fact an unstructured note and not a particular structured document type. Is that correct? That's what we're saying?
I believe so.
Okay. Al? Oh, sorry, Mark, you're up first.
Yeah, just a quick question. I see that there's a separate discharge medications data element. I don't know if it's structured or unstructured or anything. I was just poking around as you were talking, Hans, but I wondered if there's anything to say about the intersection there or not. I don't know of an intersection.
Mark, if you're talking about the discharge med list, that was the item that we discussed a couple of work groups ago that CMS had brought, where I think the conclusion is we want USCDI to have the notion of lists, but a discharge med list would be different from a discharge narrative note, and both of those would be included in a discharge summary that would be a set of structured information. Al has a question or a comment.
Yes, it's a comment, thank you. I wanted to point out that the specific pieces that are specified in the definition of discharge summary are elements that are required of the discharge summary as part of the transitions of care and or the view, download, and transmit certification requirements. So this is adding those data elements to this, shouldn't use the term data elements. Required components of the discharge summary aligns with what's already required for the discharge summary as part of the transitions of care criteria. So this is not adding anything new that's required of EHRs, three states that the content must include.
So Al, I get confused then. Is USCDI supposed to be an interoperability specification or the set of data elements from which interoperability specifications draw? The way I would conceptualize USCDI is that USCDI needs to include all of the data elements against which we would define an interoperability specification. And there's an interoperability specification for a discharge summary, the consolidated CDA document, that would draw from USCDI with all of the required data elements.
Yeah, and I think if following that, if the statement is that the discharge summary should include the data elements that are now currently spelled out, as well as narrative note, that might help. That if it bifurcates in the standard side, whatever happens there. But we wanted to avoid the impression that it currently gives that we somehow trying to make sure that inside the narrative note, there are those data elements present. That's the part that would get confusing once you start to get down the road.
Steve or Ike?
Yes. One other slight complication is the narrative could contain all that stuff. It is structured to prove it.
Right, but it's that if it should be able to contain that, it's not going to say much because it's free text. If we put it next to it and say there is structured data that addresses those things, that sends a different message downstream as we define the standards for it. That's what we're trying to avoid confusion around.
Hans ONC is not saying that the narrative component, the free text component, must contain all of these things, because the narrative is certainly what piece that we want to preserve at ONC, which is why we introduced clinical notes in the first place.
Right. Correct.
The content of that clinical note could potentially be structured, but not necessarily required to be structured. But overall, the content should include at least those components.
Ike?
And I guess the other piece in there is threading a needle on for things like medications that are not otherwise codified. How do we make those things findable in a record and a patient note? Because there are other things that are out there that we don't have a structure for today, but are really relevant and really high priority pieces of information for patient care. Like in my personal case, hey, please don't hit me with an intramuscular injection. It's effectively an allergy, but there's no way of codifying it as an allergy. If there were three or four things that you really needed to know about my care up front, here are three things, my jaw doesn't move. There are three or four little pieces of information that are absolutely key. How do we highlight those from a standards perspective so that there's a way of prioritizing them down the line on display and they're findable pieces of information?
So I've tried to capture this in a recommendation here, which is not showing up on Al's screen yet. There we go. Recommend ONC clarification that this data element is specific to the unstructured narrative portion of a discharge summary and does not include any specification or requirement of discrete data elements. Does that capture what we've been saying, Hans? Is that what you were looking for EHRA?
Not quite, because the challenge that I have is that if we say is that certain data must be part of the narrative node, which is typically and mostly narrative free text, there's no way that we can validate that admission or those structured data is in there. If we say right. that there is, in addition to narrative node, there's this other data, that's a different part. But making specifying what should be part effectively of a free text node is hard to do in USCDI.
Yeah. So the way I'd say this then is that we should specify that this is the narrative note of a discharge summary.
Mm-hmm.
Period. Right.
This yep. is, I guess to back or to follow up on my earlier question is that there are some pieces of data that we have no current way of codifying or putting in a structured document. So for those elements that we have no current way of putting in a structure, what do we do with them?
Put them in a narrative node, but it's not that we can validate that you actually did that or not, because we have no codification or structure to it.
Right, so I guess where I was looking for is kind of a may include kind of thing as a recommendation to include A, B, and C as critical pieces, but obviously not necessarily requiring it in an absolute sense. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it goes to a level of detail that's probably beyond USCDI. It sounds like Hans, EHRA just wanted this fairly straightforward clarification that this is simply the unstructured narrative portion of a discharge summary. Well, and that's why it's under clinical notes.
Clarify this. I think what your first position was better, Steve. It's just a narrative summary. It isn't necessarily a part of anything else either. And it's probably instead of. You know, in some cases.
Well, yeah, I don't think we should say whether it's instead of or not instead of. It is a narrative note, period.
I thought Steve's first position was the simplest and best when you first described it.
Well, look at the language I have and see if that's good enough, because we're just going to try to move a version of the move this over to our document to the high tech. Does that capture it or do we need something more? Hans, good?
Yep.
Okay, no hands, interest of time. Where do you want to go next, Hans?
Health insurance information. Next one is the coverage status. I believe the coverage type was covered with a prior discussion that Mark Savage had some comments around.
Somebody sorted this, so we've got a funny set of things showing here. Al, would you mind unsorting so we can see all the rows? Because I think this may have been incorporated into a recommendation already.
Yeah, it's sorted by Hans. It's sorted by Hans. It's all of his comments.
So Stephen, I did include Hans's comment here as a part of the broader recommendation on health insurance information.
And I may have a tweak suggestion, but that's not for today. That can just be a tweak.
Okay.
Later. The coverage status, I think I'm going to skip because that was a medium priority. Then go to reason for referral. That one is next on my list. This is creating a couple of different challenges because the language being used in the submission, the placement on the procedure, and the terminology used, there is something that has opportunity for confusion. The thing is that typically when the term referral is used, it's frequently more about a visit, an appointment, an encounter that is being set up, during which there might be procedures that are going to be done. Submission, there is a talk about it's a request for something. And one of the examples is for transport. So I think we have a little bit of a challenge with where does it fit on the procedure or not. But the key seems to be that it's the reason for a request. And a request can be for a service, a test, a procedure that is being done. A request can be for transport. A request can be for an encounter. So some of those terminologies we split up in different data classes and other ones we combined. And there are different ways that it happens in the standards as well. I think here we want to make sure, is this the reason for the request of something to happen? Or is this the reason why it was done? Which are not necessarily two of the same things. That's what we would like to get clarity. We think what is meant is the reason for a request to be made to get something done.
You're saying as opposed to the diagnosis or clinical condition or clinical question, really more about what is the service. Is that what you're saying?
Correct. So if the example that was used in the submission of reason for transport is because the patient has a heavy oxygen tank that needs to be moved, so we'd like to get a taxi. Or it might be, I want to have a lab test done for some particular reason that's not necessarily rising to the level of a diagnosis. So those are that's the clarity that we're looking for, because it might need to end up in one kind of area, or it might need to end up somewhere else where it's more the procedure is now done. Why did you do it? And then you typically a little bit more into the other clinical reasoning of diagnosis, conditions, et cetera.
So it seems to me, Hans, I'm sorry, Aaron, your hand's up, go ahead.
Thank you. Yeah. So the way that I would think about what Hans is saying is, you know, in an e-prescribing context, the notion of an indication for a medication is pretty common. We either would conceptualize this as the indication under which a procedure was performed. I think the right way to think about the prospective reason for referral would be attached to an order or service request, referral request. Where there is a clinical indication for a service procedure or referral that wants to happen. And again, it's the same kind of notion of the indication, the prospective indication to, you know, rule in, rule out, et cetera. That's what's occurring to me. But I think if we're talking about a procedure, which is something that actually happened, we really want to talk about the indication or the reason for the procedure as something that happened in the past, as opposed to something like a referral that wants to happen prospectively.
Right, and the submission, the text when you read through that, seems to be more on the side of the request being made and why are you making the request, than it is on the procedure having been done, why it was actually performed. That's why it's confusing as to which direction are we trying to go.
Al?
Both are valid.
So, am I, okay.
Yes, you're good.
What Hans is suggesting and what's written in the work group discussion field is really the intent of reason for referral. It is the reason that, and you use the terms consultation or transport or referral, the reason that referral was made, whether it was a referral to not for a surgical procedure, it's listed in the procedures data class because the consultation or referral is a type of procedure, and that's so it refers to the procedures that are requested services. So it's not after the fact on a billing form, you know, indication for a surgical procedure, but the reason a consult is made. And again, as I said with the previous discussion, the reason that this is added is because that is a specific requirement in transition to care certification requirement. And that transition of care is the process that this referral comes into play with. So the transitions of care, it's like a transition to a consultant or a transition to a service provider, like a transportation service provider.
So, Al, is there a set of data that you anticipate being put into this? Is there a value set?
We didn't identify a clear value set, but we could certainly give some examples of, you know, like the examples that we've just been talking about. So, why did the patient need transportation? Why did the patient need to see an orthopedic surgeon? Sometimes some referrals are for services that require prior auth and things like that. So it could potentially be used for that as well, as the justification for sending a consultation or referral or request.
Yeah, this is also a procedure, so we also need to make sure that the terminology that we use is consistent with, you know, reason for cabbage, reason for, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's why I was, yeah, that's why I was formalizing as indication with a more general, set of terminology.
Certainly can look at appropriate examples that prove that talks like maybe using some of the same examples as we just discussed, Hans suggested. And so just to get the idea that what he's asking for, what you're asking for is really what the intent, you had the right idea when you were asking about, are these examples that we're talking about, and they are.
Yeah, so there may be two things that jump out is that one is that would it be better to have a more general data element name like reason for request, of which a referral is an example of, or a couple of other examples. So the request expands a few more areas. And that also indicates is that is procedures really the right place? Is this left specifically for procedures, or is it for other ones as well where a request is made? So that's the clarity I think that we are looking for to proceed. And depending on what the scope then actually ends up being, there are more places to be touched or less places to be touched.
So could I just make a comment? I worry, sort of like David did, that we may be just putting a huge burden on the people who are asking for this stuff. You know, so if you go to the airport and you want a wheelchair, just ask for it. You don't have to give them a reason. And a whole lot of this stuff is the same way. It'll be obvious. And I don't know who needs that reason all the time. I think it'd be nice to have a place to put it. But I think I really worry about the excessive amount of work to express things when you want to write an order or write a referral.
Well, I don't think that we're necessarily saying that this is going to be required to be collected all the time, but there are places where it's relevant to be collected.
Well,
which
then I'd say maybe you should make that explicit. This is optional.
But most of them, aren't they optional?
Yeah. That's, again, this is a motif that we keep coming back to. Just because we've specified it in USCDI does not force anyone to collect it.
No, I know, but if people pick this up and it mutates, they forget where they came from. And I think we should say that these things, prescriptions hardly ever have a diagnosis on them, for example. I think they would be nice, but they don't. So I think we should make it a little bit explicit. This is not intended, that we got to keep adding work to the primary care docs who are fleeing the field as fast as they can get out of it because of all this crap.
On a general note, from what Clem has indicated, we have been talking about and indicating that there needs to be more clarity on what in USCDI is really meant to be used by certain HIT, because not all HIT supports this, needs to support it, either as maintenance or viewing or otherwise. So I left that conversation on the side for a moment, but it does go to the point. I think a way to address that, but I'm not sure whether you want to get into that today, Stephen and Arian, or for a separate discussion to clarify, how can we really make sure that while on the one hand, there's no intent that what is in USCDI is used by everybody, it needs to be applicable in your space. In the transition towards HIT that is certified, there's some gotchas in that approach that we need to iron out.
This is Steve. I think really fast, Sam, to your point or question about, there doesn't have to be a rationalization as to why I need the wheelchair at the airport or a diagnosis attached to a particular prescription, it may not make a difference on the clinical side. It makes a huge difference on the payment side. I can't get reimbursed for it by my health insurer if it's not determined to be medically necessary. So without that linkage that says the wheelchair is required to deal with this diagnosis, who's paying for it? Same thing looking at something like a prescription, especially looking at off-label use or things were misaligned there in terms of looking at, physicians certainly can prescribe medications for things that are off-label. It doesn't mean that the health insurance companies care to pay for it. So that's another context where not just it's prescribed, but why it's there does make a difference. That may not be ubiquitous, but it is a factor out there really reflecting on how the information is being used and by whom, not just the information exists.
Okay, I think we've got a recommendation text here. Is anybody uncomfortable with how we've captured this? Hans, does this address your concern?
Correct.
Great. All right. Hans, we're a third of the way through our meeting today. So I'd like to invite Clem, if that's all right with you, to highlight your top couple of priority items, Clem, amongst the many thoughtful recommendations that you've made.
Well, I thought I already sent you the highlighted one, didn't I?
But it's not about me. it's about the work group.
How can I find what I highlighted?
If you want to work on that, Clem, we can come back to you. That's fine. No, didn't mean to put you on the spot.
If you could just constrain it to
So Al just sorted. Al just sorted to yours.
Okay. Let's see.
And if you'd like, I can sort.
Well,
by the
some of these, that... I think. Some of these, I don't think are really essential. Are important. So let's drop down. See, what do we got here?
I do want to acknowledge how much work you put into this and hence give you a chance.
Let's see.
And we should just note anything that's marked in purple has already been addressed. So
the purples have been addressed, you're saying?
Yep. Yes.
Oh, well, I just wanted to clarify about the SDOH on two levels. I think it's really two different places.
Which row are you in, Clem?
Well, I'm it just moved.
66, I think, perhaps.
Give me a minute. And could I give you another
document? Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. Yeah. We can come back to, again. No pressure. Okay. Okay. Back to our agenda. We wanted to complete review of health status entries 26 through 36 and 70. Do you want to take us there? And I know, Mark, you
is that right, Stephen?
That's what we have on the agenda.
Okay. So I just was clarifying.
Yeah. Mark or Arian, you guys put a lot of thought into this. I know. Do you want to walk us through any of the drafted recommendations, or do we want to leave that to people to review them and provide input?
Maybe we should give an overview for the drafted recommendations and then let people go and read all the details.
Sounds good.
Mark has his hand up.
I think this the same thing. We already discussed them individually. The final recommendations try to capture what we discussed. So I think there's nothing really to revisit, but just to make sure that the language captures what we thought it should capture.
Why don't we go to row 26? I think row 5, is it row 5 or row 4, or entry 5 and entry 4 and entry 26 are the ones that are the big ones. So on row
26. We're on 26. Let's go there.
Yeah. On row 26, we support the inclusion of disability, functional, and cognitive mental status. We recommend that the data element that was labeled mental function be labeled cognitive mental status. We recommend that they be included as health status / assessment. In the health status and assessment recommendations, which I believe are item 4 or 5, we also recommend that health status assessment be inclusive of patient self-assessment. So no implication that these are clinical assessments, but inclusive of patient-generated health data. And then there's a bunch of detailed recommendations related to the value sets that were that could be included as a core value set, inclusive of the ACS Washington Group survey that was recommended by the disability rights panel that we had. As well as a set of the functional status, cognitive mental status, and disability status recommendations recommended by Holly and Terry. So really intended to be a superset recommendation related to all of our deliberation on disability status, functional status, and cognitive mental status. If we go up to, I think it's entry 5, could be entry 4, my memory is you know, off by one, but there we go.
for assessment.
So this is the overall recommendation relative to assessments. So our general recommendation is that we think about health status as health status slash assessments with LUNC as the applicable code set. We recommend that we fold the SDOH assessment into the health status assessment class. Just conceptually, it belongs there. And again, as I noted, we contemplate that assessments are inclusive of self-assessments and patient-generated health data. And again, just putting in a set of recommended SDOH assessments from the work that Holly and Terry provided. So those are the those are the high-level recommendations that we're making relative to health status assessments, and then how to handle the specific status types that we contemplated for cognitive mental status, disability status, and functional status. Any questions there? Hans has his hand up.
Yeah, one quick question. I think I overall support the recommendation with some of the renaming and the alignments. The question is mostly on the tools and the assessment tools that are being suggested. Question there is, since there are so many different assessment tools out there, not used by some tools, not used by many, do we feel comfortable? And I would look at others, do feel comfortable that this is a reasonable core set that is used by most providers to have that sharing opportunity take advantage of that.
So Hans, just structurally, number one, you'll see in the first recommendation that when we say that LUNC is the applicable code set, we clarify the intent is not for every EHR to be able to produce every possible assessment. Number two is, in these areas where we're listing these assessment types and associated LUNC codes, we're very clear that ONC may consider the following sets, not that we recommend that this be the core value set. Because Holly and Terry did a ton of work. I think it's worthwhile to think about that as the starter set for a core set. But this would be clearly something where you'd want a multi-collaborative group to create the core starter set. So I think we're very careful to acknowledge the work that Holly and Terry did, but also not to make recommendations that this be the one and only set.
And on the latter point, totally appropriate. Curious to that the first part that you indicate, that we encourage ONC to work with a community to establish a core set that is more widely used. That might be some part of the recommendation as well.
We recommend that ONC work with stakeholders to identify and specify core LUNC subsets for each of the assessment categories.
Well, Hans, could I just add though that that may never happen, I think it's really, really useful to say, here's some starters, because people a lot of times don't care, but they can find it and get it done. And then it would be nice if there weren't 10,000 different things for the same thing, if we really ever going to collect data across the country for any use. So I think it's a good idea to encourage a starter set of some kind. And then there'll have to be more. And of course, they can go to lots of other LUNC panels too if they like. But
I think we've clarified that, Clement. And Al, your hand is up. I know some of these were also included in the task force recommendations last year. And I think you've mentioned to us that you did include that detail in some of your documentation, correct?
But I wanted to specifically address the question about developing code sets. Those are done. Those have been developed, and all of these SDOH assessment instruments have associated low-link codes. The panels have low-link codes, and the subset domains have low-link codes as well. And that was after about 6 or 12 months of work by the Gravity Project to develop these code sets. And they are establishing value sets within the VSAC to be able to represent them. And a list like this or a list like the value set that Gravity actually is the value set author and steward for, is the set that we're very likely to point to as the example set or the minimum set, depending on what we end up calling it. But that is already done. I just want everybody to be clear that that is already being done, and it's our intent to point to a reasonable set of examples already. So you can include the recommendation, but it's that recommendation from last year has already been acted on. And I don't want to say that complete, but it's that work has been done.
Good. I mean, so, and I think that's consistent with the recommendations anyway. So that's excellent.
All right. Anything else on this one then, Mark or Arian?
Not from me. Thank you.
Well, there's something that'll kind of my set that there's a little confusion in how it's now written for SDOH, because it'll say, you know, we've got concerns and that could be LONC or SNOMED. It can't be LONC. It had to be SNOMED. And then the other side, they talk about questionnaires and they talk about LONC or SNOMED. Well, it really should be LONC in that case. So I'll get to that, but I don't know if that doesn't show up in this part. But I mean, one of them is for an assertion of a finding or diagnosis, and the other one is for gathering questions with variables on the ends.
Thank you. So I think Clem, your point is that a health status could be a SNOMED code, and an assessment should be a SNOMED code, and an assessment should be LONC coded.
And Steve, Liz should be sending you the list of issues, kind of thinned down.
Okay. All right. But I think that's what we was there another one you wanted to touch on this morning?
You're talking about me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I have a number of them I wanted to touch on, and if you look in your email, I think she just sent it to you with the numbers, the reference numbers.
Okay, I'm not seeing that in my personal email, but
well, let me just see what's happening.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Maybe we should jump out then come back then. Okay. Again, Clem, that's good. Sure. We'll look for that. Okay. Oh, the other thing I don't mean to be disjointed here. With regard to health status items, Mark and Arian, did we cover the highlights as you guys put them together?
Stephen, there were some others that got categorized as health status, but I think the suggestion that people just review to make sure that we captured them is the best use of time. So, for example, pregnancy status was an example. Okay. I think you just read it
first. I'll find out. Thanks. Bye.
Yeah, I think... can you jump to pregnancy real quick, Al? There we go. Yep, it was there. Okay. Yes, this captures the language we put in last time. Okay, so this is basically giving support to ONC's inclusion in the of pregnancy status in the draft V3, correct?
Correct, with the one suggestion of at least capturing intent to become pregnant because of the implications for things like fertility and medications, but leaving the not listing out as it was under the member recommendation, but just identifying the other things for ONC's consideration.
Very good. And of course, ONC will know how to consider that.
Yes.
All right.
Now, could I clarify, is there a specific list of answers? I mean, do we have a particular term?
I think there was a yes, no, don't know.
Well, I'm not sure if
we
clarify what we want.
The next data element definition is those three examples.
So
but
this
does not include intent or contraceptive status, as Arian was asking about.
So the recommendation here that would come from our work group would be to add to the three established values in the value set the additional value of intent to become pregnant because of its importance. Does anybody object to that?
No, but I just would like to know how to get it implemented as a physical variable.
Other than adding it as an example or part of a value set, I think that would be sufficient, but I just put it out there.
Well, if it were just presented as text like that, it won't be able to be sent around very well.
Yeah, no. So I think the recommendation should be inclusive of creating a value set, presumably in SNOMED. That's responsive. That's the list of proposed responses. And then Al, just to be clear, this is not inclusive of contraceptive status, which means that we're not able to address REMS or other teratogenicity issues.
Okay. What's the variable here then? Is it called pregnancy status?
Pregnancy status. That's the status.
And it would be a value set, presumably encoded in SNOMED, that would be precise in terms of the meaning of each response.
Any objections? No hands up? We're going to let it go. All right. Mark, anything else from the health status section?
Let me just take a quick peek at a separate list, and I will get back to you in a second.
No problem.
I have the list of the numbers.
Okay. You want to pick another one or two to go through, Clem?
Yeah, and Liz said she sent it to you and to Arian, so I don't know. 28.
28. Al's going to get us there.
Well, that's pregnancy status.
Yeah, that was.
Okay. Then the next one is 29.
Now with smoking status.
Yeah, maybe we've already covered this. But, you know, the ones we now have in USCDI or in the spec, it really doesn't do half of the way we usually ask it, like pack years and, you know, how soon you wake up in the morning, take a cigarette off. There's five or six or seven really very sensitive measures about the addiction and all. And these are, they're in LINC and they're in PROMISE, you know, which is that federally supported automatic sort of computer-based questionnaire. So I'd like to see about extending it some.
When you say extending, do you mean specifying a value set?
Well, specifying additional LINC terms with answers over their variable. I mean, one of the very sensitive detector of how addicted you are to tobacco is how early in the morning do you have to take your first smoke? And then there's pack years, which is, you know, an ancient and universal data element that's, you know, that people have been collecting for years. And there's a handful of other ones. We could propose a specific list, but I think it's just too short now than what we have now. And there's not a variable. It's an observation, and there's not a variable to collect them and to package them with.
So you're talking about adding, as we've discussed before, adding examples.
Yes.
That could be used to populate this data element, example value sets, but not requiring specific ones.
Well, I'm really talking about a package of a question and a set of answers. That's how we've done all the surveys, that's how all of the assessments are done. And then you have a handle on the whole package, and the answers can be SNOMED or whatever. Now, there is a, well, I won't go into that.
So again, we've covered a lot of assessments, right? We've discussed many of them, and the idea of being able to specify example assessments that include questions and answers. So you point out in your justification specific the promise and the Fenix, but then you say these should not be excluded. So do you mean to say that you'd like to include those as examples that could be of instruments that could be used to capture smoking status?
Instrument or variables. I mean, you must have asked pack years in your practice.
Of course.
Al? It's nowhere.
Al, you want to comment?
I did. I think somebody overwrote the comment that I just entered in the workgroup discussion field. As a reminder, ONC currently requires that certified health IT capture smoking status using SNOMED, but does not specify particular codes that must be used as they had in 2015. So the current requirement, just as a matter of reference, the current requirement is to capture smoking status using SNOMED codes.
No, and I think that's fine. I would only suggest we add to it.
But Al, I think what you're saying is that it was more specific and we've made it less specific. Is that accurate?
Yes, that's accurate. There was pushback on the 8 that we selected because, as Clem pointed out, things like depending on your perspective, if you're a heart doctor, you really are more concerned about the last 30 days of smoking. If you're a cancer doctor, you worry about the last 30 years. So, and because there was not an agreement about how best to use the set of codes, we actually removed the specified codes from the requirement in the certificate in the Cures edition.
Okay.
And in US.
So why don't you get out of the field, Al, so we can see which of our changes have stuck. Okay, yours stuck. Mine didn't.
Mine didn't. I'm looking at mine.
Okay. I guess neither one of ours did because we were both in there at the same time. All right. Is there a recommendation to come out of this, Clem? So what you've heard is that this was there was more specification, but there was pushback from industry.
I disagree. There is a list of 6 SNOMED codes, and and they're okay, but it's not what anyone has ever used in terms of routine practice. I think I wouldn't change them. I'm only suggesting we should add assessments type of questions to capture more variants that are currently being used. I think what Dave's just saying.
So Al, how do you feel about that, Rick? Is that going to go anywhere?
It's a change in direction. As we've done in the past with other data elements, we had been less specific or less stringent in the requirements because there's multiple different even approaches to smoking status. Whether it's depending on what you want to do with the information about smoking status, you could use a different kind of assessment. You know, do you smoke at all? You're going to get smoking cessation counseling. If you have a heavy pack year history, you might get cancer screening. It depends on. So we have been less specific about how exactly to do it, meaning we don't say you must use or EHRs must be able to use specific assessments or specific code sets. So if the work group wants to recommend adding back or adding more specificity, that's fine.
Well, Al, I'd suggest we're adding more options. Some of which are more specific.
All options are available if none are specified.
Examples, so people can find their way.
It's David here. I mean, it seems like we've made some progress on this general notion of assessments, and we've used that list of a potentially appropriate assessments in a number of our categories. And that seems quite powerful. And it seems to me this is just another case where selecting the appropriate assessment based on clinical context makes as much sense as it does in SDOH or disability or any of the other places where we now have sort of a standard way to capture potentially complex information if the context requires it, or very simple information if the context doesn't require it. I would word it the same way as all of our other assessments.
Well, okay, so I just put in a recommendation, if we can slide a little to the right on 29, ONC to clarify that this data element could use a number of assessment instruments and include a set of examples.
Sorry,
does that sound good? Al?
What about smoking? Have you included the word smoking history?
No, this is under smoking status.
Oh, okay. All right. I've got another one then, if that's...
Okay, one more.
41.
Perfect.
I'm going to get to a bingo here.
I think... Okay, this is laboratory specimen type, and your comment was optional.
Yeah, because, I mean, I heard the arguments, but... It's not true in chemistry that it's important. Microbiology, sometimes it is, but even there's names like stool culture. You know, it's all connected. And it'd be a huge burden to the laboratories who aren't used and users to have to be specific all the time. I think it's okay. I think there are many good cases to have additional specificity in the specimen because it's some peculiar reality. But the average test is serum, or it's blood, or it's urine. You know, they're all concatenated in one name in all the lab manuals and all the lab offerings. So I just don't think we should make it required.
And here again, Al, would you consider the fact that there is a data element called specimen type within the laboratory class, does that imply that this is required for every single laboratory test, or simply that this is where it would be captured and it would be sent if available?
So two things. The reason that we added it is because it is a critical piece of certain sets of labs, and it's an available piece for many, if not all, kinds of labs. And in particular, this was brought up in response to the COVID pandemic, where specimen type is critical to the validation of the lab test itself. If it's an inappropriate specimen, it's not a valid result. And so this is specifically introduced to address some of the requirements around pandemic labs. If it were to be part of USCDI as a data element, and it was was made available for voluntary update by EHRs, that and an EHR voluntarily updated to USCDI version future, then it would be required that updated EHR be able to capture specimen type.
Is it that it captures it, or that it is able to report on it, which are two different things?
And able to capture and exchange in the appropriate exchange transaction.
I think at some point we need to define terms like capture and maintenance and supports further.
There's structure in all the messages, V2 and in FHIR for a specimen. And it's like a 6 or 7 or 8 elements. It's not a simple element. And clearly it needs to be available. But it's still the implication. If you look at lab testing, 98% of it has the name of the specimen in the test, and it doesn't cause any problems.
Yeah,
so it'll be a big burden to make that have to change.
Aaron?
I've got my hand up. Just
go ahead.
From a perspective of following process. So part of the conceptual issue that we have here, and I've been framing mentally some recommendations, have written some to a number of people, is that we have two classes, medications and labs, that are in fact highly formally specified in interoperability requirements that are in certification. So for medications, the controlling data classes and data elements are controlled by the implied content model in NCPDB script standard, as well as the implied content model in consolidated CDA and FHIR. And for lab, a little less specified because we don't require LRI and LOI, but you know, in practice, every EHR and you know, many certified health information technology systems can interoperate lab data via HL7V2 and certainly are required to interoperate via consolidated CDA and FHIR that each have a content model that's inclusive of multiple elements. And the landing place for me that would be the best here would be to repoint USCDI to the implied content model for interoperability that's already specified in those implementation guides, rather than adding onesie twosie, well, we need to do this because it's required by COVID. Well, what about the other thing that's already required that isn't already specified? It would be better just to do fell swoop content modeling. And then with respect to this notion of required to capture, when you look at interoperability specifications, in some cases, interoperability specifications require certain elements because that data element does not mean anything without the inclusion, or that data class does not mean anything without the inclusion of the required data element. But in many cases, we intentionally do, you know, required if known, or other kinds of content specifiers to underscore that in real world interoperability, there are many things that should be included if they're available, but are not always available. As Clem notes, you know, specimen type, test kit, et cetera, may be implied in the order or the orderable. And implied, implicit in the orderable, they may be well known specimen types. It may be pleonastic to include them, but there are cases where it's important to include them, and they should be included when relevant. And again, pointing at the implied content models that are already in place for interoperability would I think address this area better than adding onesie twosie element types based on use case X and use case Y, when in fact all of this information is already specified in controlling interoperability requirements.
Hung Lu?
So I guess I would like a clarification on Arian's strategy then. Are we to then just leave the lab section blank and just say refer to LRR, or are we saying that we should in fact be inclusive of all the elements that have been specified and will be specified in interoperability strategies and make the lab list more robust? Because currently the two lab elements currently contained in version 1 and version 2 are inadequate for interoperability. And my concern is a lot of interoperability is happening now. If the effort to make the list more inclusive takes 5 to 10 years, because some of the elements are not even comment section, then that's going to hold back a lot of progress.
Hans wants to get in.
Yes, I generally agree with Arian that we have boluses of standards that where a lot of this data is actually already defined. Some of those already are in different ways part of certification programs. Other ones are not, but that's out there. And I'd support his suggestion, as it also indicates that USCDI really should start to encompass full EHI. At the same point in time, does that need to be done immediately, or are we looking more for attributes that for which standards do not fully exist yet or have not been adopted? I think that's a roadmap discussion at some point in time to be had, because clearly it's going to be a multi-year process to get to them all. But yes, all these things are defined in standards, but they're not necessarily defined in CCDA or FHIR US Core. So while it's in ELR or while it's in ECR or some places that support workflows, it is not in the general access capabilities that FHIR US Core have. So we also need to start to harmonize that, because that's getting increasingly challenging. I'm wondering whether that should be a discussion on how do we want to progress USCDI after we wrapped up the immediate USCDI version through 3 recommendations, and then focus on how should it really grow, what should it focus on, and can we take advantage of those boluses of work?
That's right. So Hans, just to be precise, the way that I would recommend doing this, and I agree that we probably should take this on after we finish our ISA portion. But the way that I would formalize doing this would be to point USCDI at the implied content model that's already required by implementation guides that are in certification, and then assess the adds to that content model for items that are not already required in implementation guidance, carefully coordinated with the implementation guidance that would then require or add those additional data elements. So for example, to memorialize that, if we do not have, which we don't, have LOI and LRI guides in certification, then the controlling content model is the US core FHIR model, as well as the consolidated CDA model. We would formalize what that is, and then we would propose adding to USCDI in conjunction with adding to the US core standards.
Yeah, and Aaron, generally I agree with that. Just want to note that to date, the USCDI has been focusing on vocabulary standards only that are being referenced. It's not referencing any other standards. Those standards are more the opposite direction. What do I need for certification that support the USCDI? And that's where the other ones come in. So we have to work through that. So having that conversation after USCDI V3 would be great if we can put it on the calendar.
Okay, sure. So the recommendation I'm trying to capture here is not really for our report to HITACH, but for subsequent work. Is that fair?
Yeah, and I think in our report to HITACH, we would acknowledge that this issue exists and list it as a priority for immediate future work.
Great. All right. So I think Clem, last word, Clem.
Well, I think I'm fine without that result, but I'd like, I've got three more, but the one I really like to get in, really it relates to some Aaron brought up. It's really two things. One of them is that, I don't know whether it's 60, 61, or I've got three more, I don't know which it is, but basically I think we got to include the abnormal, what used to call that abnormal flag or it's the interpretation. Everybody uses that. You know, you read the report and you look for those little H's or stars or whatever. And it pains me that they aren't in there. And apropos of what Arian brought up, we ought to have normal ranges in there too, because that's one way to validate sort of across different sources and all the rest. And I don't know why that's been forgotten. But those two things, the abnormal range and the normal ranges, reference ranges, I think is the official name.
Yep.
And the interpretation, which is really an abnormal flag, which it used to be called. I mean, it's just a signal. It's not a text interpretation. Those things are so useful on reporting and all that I just don't understand how we forgot them.
Al, can you clarify, are those at level two?
I don't think so.
Specifically reference ranges?
Reference range and the normal, abnormal, perhaps critical flag.
I'd have to check to see if those are in USCDI at all.
I don't think they are, Al. And it's as much my fault because I've been in on this for the whole time as anyone's.
Okay. Well, thank you, Clem, for raising that. And we're going to move on. Thank you so much, Hans, Clem, Mark, et cetera.
Are you going to take a position on that?
We can't. It's not in our scope. Unless it's at level two, we can't discuss it. So we'll
level three, I thought we could propose new ones.
But we can only choose from level two to bring them into version three. We can't bring them out of thin air at this point. That's a different process. And Al's shaking his head in agreement. So I want to move to Hung Lu, who put a lot of effort and made a presentation to us last time and wanted to come back to those recommendations and see if we can finalize anything out of those before we go to public comment. Hung?
Thank you, Stephen. And so additions I would like is the test kit identifier and specimen source site and also to specify for values and results for the ontology to be SNOMED, so that it is standardized across the reporting. And so the reason is partly COVID, because of the fact that some of this information is required by the government agencies to be reported by the lab. But currently there is there's not uniform opportunity for labs to capture and transmit these information. The laboratories are still meeting the laboratory requirements. Oftentimes it's a lot of work around. And so I'm asking that this be included in version 3 so that it be accommodated by electronic infrastructure, so that it's not a manual entry by laboratories trying to meet the regulatory requirements for this. And also in the future, for a future use of laboratory data, in order to have a robust interoperability, we can't subsist on the few the lab elements that are currently in there. There's a recognition that there has to be a more robust coding system, and I think this would contribute to that, especially as the FDA moves toward real-world data use for regulatory decision-making. A lot of these elements are essential and are not currently captured in our current coding and transmission strategies.
So those are pretty straightforward recommendations. In column H, recommend inclusion of test kit unique identifier in V3 and include SNOMED CT under applicable standards for values results, as well as specimen type, which we were discussing earlier. Anyone want to support or refute those recommendations?
Isn't this the same problem we just had with the normal range?
Yeah, it's the same issue. There's a bunch of stuff that's obvious and already specified in US Core that's not currently in US CDI. I think of all of this, the add SNOMED as applicable standard is the cleanest, just given the existing structure of US CDI. But I think that for the rest of it, we'd want to go down the route that we just discussed.
And maybe to add is that actually, as we get to this level of detail, a lot of it is in other standards than FHIR, US Core, or CCDA. And it's a question of how do we pull those in? Because that knowledge, those exchanges, lab reporting for public health, otherwise are already happening, even if that happens at some point in time in a very localized way.
And people have mentioned CLIA as well, CLIA CAP, but particularly CLIA because it's HHS already has regulatory requirements for data elements.
So with regard to the test kit unique identifier and its inclusion in V3, I know, Arian, you had some thoughts about that last week.
Yeah. So again, for that one in particular, my general stance is we should structure the obvious and already included by default because they're included in FHIR or included in consolidated CDA or included in CORE before we add the non-obvious ones or the ones that require changes to implementation guidance. As I said, of all of these, the cleanest one to add would be adding SNOMED as an applicable vocabulary standard, because it already is, you know, it's already de facto required for an interpretation and interpreted values as opposed to findings as opposed to numeric values.
It's already in the lab specifications. It's
already in the lab specifications. Yep.
Yeah, and to notice that test kit unique identifier is not necessary in FHIR US Core clarified. It is in ELR or in work in progress there, or has already been specified now to do it.
Yeah, that's definitely another specification that actually is de facto required, which is the ELR spec. But alas, the LRI and LOI specs have never been required in certification.
Yeah, LRI has been.
All right. So what is the discrete recommendation we would like to propose? Actually, maybe Al, why don't you make your comment first?
I just had a question, and pardon my ignorance on this. Is the who manages the list of test kit unique identifiers?
The FDA, I think. I'm not sure.
Is that right, Hung?
Yes, the FDA.
Yeah. At least from an approved perspective, yes.
Well, presumably it would be approved test kits and machines that are running these tests.
Yeah. Yeah, effectively identifiers.
Well, be aware that
I did have another follow-up question on that. Is there a direct link between a test kit? Because I think that when they're approved, the test kits get a low-ink code or have a low-ink code associated with it, which I want to say that maybe the test kit low-ink code might be unique. If that's not true, you know, let me know.
That is not true. The test kit, the low-ink codes for are many to one. And so many test kits are coded to a single
because it's a methodology.
The loin code represents the test. The test kit is the device, and that can be identified by manufacturers in a variety of different ways. So test kits are approved, but not necessarily identifier.
Could I add to that? Because it's a complex space. So it could be separate test kit or codes from the FDA for the reagents, for the machine that does it. They can have different sorts of reagents in different cases. So it's often a hierarchy or a cluster of things. So just be aware that of that complexity that might occur. And the lab, the test, the LOINC codes can be many to many because the test kits won't often distinguish between specimens.
All right, I'd like to formulate some recommendations, and I'm going to turn to my illustrious co-chair, Ariane, to help us with this. Let's look at the Hung's recommendations regarding SNOMED for both specimen type and values results.
Yeah,
How should we phrase this?
This would be one that we recommend that in USCDI V3, SNOMED CT be included as a value set or a vocabulary standard applicable to qualitative findings.
These in particular. For lab values, results, and specimen type. So right now,
lab results include LOINC as a vocabulary standard. We would propose including SNOMED as a vocabulary standard. So LOINC is the test. UCM typically is either a numeric value with a UCM code or a SNOMED code if it's a quantitative finding.
So that was exactly what was specified in a previous survey, USCDI. They split them out, saying the answers, if it's quantitative, it has to have UCM. Yep. If it's non-quantitative or if it's ordinal, nominal, it has to have a SNOMED code. And the test itself is LOINC. That's an old spec.
Yeah, this has been consistent. This has been a consistent set of recommendations.
All right. So here, let me get out of my field so you can see what I wrote. So recommend that USCDI V3 notes SNOMED CT is an applicable vocabulary standards for values and results. LOINC still used to specify test. UCM for units. Sorry, you have to scroll a little bit there, Al, or I'll just shrink something so we can see it better. Okay. Al, can you refresh a little bit so we can all see that? There we go. Is that?
Yep. And I would just use qualitative for qualitative lab results.
Yeah, we got it.
Safer. Result is a very ambiguous term. It includes both the test identifier and the content of what comes out of it. I think if you distinguish between value as the thing we're talking about or the answer, it'd be clearer.
Al, you're in the field. Do you want to make a change there to make it clearer or want to recommend a change?
Or value results?
I think that's good now. Yeah.
Okay.
We know that SNOMED results are qualitative and UCM are quantitative. We get that. There isn't also a LOINC low-ink, there are a set of low-ink answers as well. Some of them are mapped to SNOMED. I just throw that out because we were at a time considering low-ink SNOMED and UCOM as reasonable options for applicable standards, but we, because there were, well, air quotes, so many different potential applicable standards, we went to none,
basically. And for specimen type?
Well, specimen type is interesting because although SNOMED is recommended, the low-ink codes, my understanding is that the low-ink codes are the ones that are used to associate specimen type in the livid set, but I might be wrong on that. Somebody can quickly correct me if I am wrong.
The livid set actually specifies SNOMED for the.
Okay. Thank you for correcting me. Yeah, so that aligns, that recommendation aligns with the livid set, which is really was the model for this becoming a new data element.
Well, could I just bring up one more issue with the answers? And in the case, so we should clarify, SNOMEDs are concept codes answers. And at least in some spaces, and I think it's been true of the recent assessments, that survey instrument creators don't like to play with the words in their surveys. They want exactly that same string. And so when those strings are replaced with a concept, it often doesn't come out to be the same, you know, validated survey instrument. So just be aware of that. And so in some cases, it would almost be ideal to have both of them in some cases. The SNOMED code is a string code. It's literally what that string was, just for the record.
All right.
And I think the livid process sorts through that, Clem, and that's how they came with a set of defined codes that, you know, define the universe of specimen types.
Yeah.
And with regard to the test kit unique identifier, are we going to leave that for another day?
I think we need to dig a little deeper. It would be good. I support it. If we can make it happen. I'm not even sure if the FDA is getting everything codes yet. Does anyone know?
Hung, do you want to comment?
It's a requirement. And so this is a requirement that has to be met by the laboratories to provide the test kit information for the COVID testing that they are supplying to the public health laboratories.
But there's laboratory developed tests that don't get those. And I thought the FDA was a bit behind on getting everything coded. I'm not sure.
So, and that is also in the newest version of the LIVID file, is that there is information for the test kit and the instrument. And so this would make it kind of decrease the burden on the laboratories to have to manually supply it when we could accommodate it through the electronic infrastructure.
Okay, somebody popped a recommendation into column K, which is oddly formatted, but that's okay. Let me see. I'll get out of there. Okay. Yeah, you need to wrap your text.
I can't. I don't know how to do that.
Here, I'll do it. Get out of there. I'll do it. Format, wrapping, wrap. Go. All right. All right. So, Al, you've suggested recommend inclusion in V3 FDA test kit unique identifier as applicable standard or value set. Again, that's not a requirement. It's if you have it, you should exchange it using this. Arian, could you live with that?
As I said, my conceptual issue is not including this. My conceptual issue is all the other stuff that's super obvious that is actually much more impactful for interoperability that we're not including as Clem notes, including reference ranges, without which it's really hard to interpret a test result.
Yes.
If I had to get something, if I had to get something, I would get a reference range over getting and a normality indicator or the indicator over getting the test kit.
And I'd like to understand why we can add the test kit, which I think is a good idea, but we can't add reference range.
My interpretation here is that in the early days of USCDI, we made a decision, we the nation made a decision that lab and medication are really complex objects that are already formally specified in implementation guides, and it would be really complicated to put together a reference model. So we're just going to call it medications and labs because everyone knows what they are. And then now we're looking at that and thinking, well, we need to add something, but we don't know now what we're adding to, what forms the core set that we're adding to, or that we're proposing against. That would be my interpretation of how we got to this place is someday, you know, back in the past for USCDI V1, we all thought we knew what we were talking about because we had the core specifications both for consolidated CDA and FHIR. We had the applicable implementation specifications. We thought we knew what all these things meant, and now we're trying to add to these things, but we're not quite clear what we're adding to.
Okay, let's hold that thought and go to public comment.
Great, thank you. We're going to open up our meeting today for public comment. So if you're on Zoom and would like to make a comment, please use the hand raise function, which is located on the Zoom toolbar at the bottom of your screen. If you happen to be on the phone only, press star 9 to raise your hand, and once called upon, press star 6 to mute and unmute your line. So let's look to see if we have any public comments. I am not seeing any public comments, so I will. Oh, we had one pop their hand up. Laura King, you have 3 minutes.
Hi, thank you so much. I'm sure if I'm off of mute, can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Perfect. Thank you. So my name is Laura King. I'm the Director of Public Health, the American Heart Association, and my background and training is in as being a registered nurse, and I've worked in public health for over 25 years. First, I want to thank the Interoperability Standards Workgroup and the ONC for their efforts to advance and expand the United States core data for interoperability. High blood pressure impacts more than 120 million people in the US, and it's the leading modifiable risk factor for preventing death from cardiovascular disease. The accurate measurement and interpretation of blood pressure is vital for diagnosing high blood pressure and assessing effectiveness of treatment. Access to a common set of data, health data classes and elements will help physicians, healthcare practitioners, and public health professionals diagnose, treat, and care for patients with high blood pressure and ensure these individuals are engaged and empowered with data and much needed information and support across the healthcare community. The clinical evidence and guidelines outline the importance of proper estimation of individuals' blood pressure requires multiple blood pressure readings, measurement readings, and meaning that the blood pressure should be diagnosed after two or more blood pressure readings and have obtained at separate intervals and then averaged. This is the case regardless of where their blood pressure is taken, such as in an office setting or a patient measuring their own blood pressure at home. Thus, consistent communication of average blood pressure is critical for addressing hypertension nationwide. Including the average blood pressure in the USCDI Plus would make it easier for physicians and other healthcare providers to diagnose and treat blood pressure and access blood pressure control more accurately. Practitioners need health IT systems that can store and exchange average BP separate and apart from individual readings. This would assist with improved documentation, enabling physicians to utilize more accurate and appropriate information in their clinical decision-making and help solve one of many interoperability issues that have challenged the systemic uptake of SMBP, which is outlined in the PHI report. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the American Medical Association, and the National Association of Community Health Centers agree with the American Heart Association and support a standardized average blood pressure data element. The AHA asks for the interoperability standards work group include the level 2 average blood pressure data element and its recommendations for inclusion in the USCDAI version number 3. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Laura. Really appreciate that. Is there another public comment?
I'm not seeing any other public comments, Stephen.
Wonderful. Laura, of note, one of your colleagues also made that same recommendation, I think it was last week, and we have not had a chance to take it up as a work group, but certainly your recommendations have been recorded in the public record, and ONC is well aware of them. So thank you. That does bring us to time, painfully. We, your co-chairs and leads, will continue to try to capture and massage the recommendations. Real quick, Al and Mike, we do not have a second meeting this week, is my recollection. We are meeting again next week, and that is the time that we, I think that is the last time we have to go through any recommendations, is that correct, before we craft the draft document to then review with this group on the 5th? Do I have that right?
Yeah, the 5th is for, that's the last opportunity that we have to review finalized recommendations before we construct or finish constructing the draft, the letter.
Okay, so the 29th will be another chance to go through recommendations that have been submitted, and we will go through the list again and prioritize those to bring forward to this group, and we'll let you know with the homework. Once again, if any of you, you know, including Clem, have particularly high priority items that you would really like us to address next week, please let us know, and we will try to put that on the agenda.
So I do, Steve. I have three more, I think.
Good. Okay. Resend us the three, and we will see if we can fit them in next week. Okay, Clem.
Okay. Thank you.
And same to you, Hans. If you've got a couple more, hopefully we'll have time for them.
Okay. Sounds good.
Thank you all. Have a great day.
Thanks all.
Thank you.